Darwin Productions Inc. presents In CinemaScope. A man and a woman in night attire lay on separate beds. Their faces are concealed by satin sheets and pillows. They throw pillows at a screen marked out in brown squares. The screen stands between the beds. Pillow Talk. Rock Hudson, Doris Day. Tony Randall, Thelma Ritter, with Nick Adams, Julia Mead, Alan Jenkins, Marcel Dalio. Lee Patrick, Mary McCarthy, Alex Jerry, Hayden Rourke, Valerie Allen, Jacqueline Beer. Arlen Stewart, Robert B. Williams, Perry Blackwell, William Shellett, Karen Norris. Screenplay by Stanley Shapiro and Morris Ricklin. The couple play catch with the pillows. Director of photography, Arthur E. Arling. Gowns for Doris Day by Jean-Louis. Art director, Richard H. Rydell. Set decorations, Russell A. Gaussman, Ruby R. Levitt. Sound, Leslie I. Carey, Robert Pritchard. Colour consultant, Henry Jaffa. Film editor, Milton Kerruth. Makeup, Bud Westmore. Assistant director, Phil Bowles. Music by Frank DeVol. Music supervision by Joseph Gershenson. Produced by Ross Hunter and Martin Melcher. Directed by Michael Gordon.
There must!
A brassy blonde in blue lingerie and blue sequined shoes smooths her hand over her leg. She floats to a white built-in wardrobe and slides the door back. She takes out a blue gown. She pats her wavy blonde hair. She looks at her watch, picks up the phone, and interrupts a smoochy chit-chat on her line.
Brad, darling, I love you.
I know.
I just had to call you. I'll never forget last night, especially when you sang me your new song.
Our song, Eileen. I wrote it for you.
Oh, Brad. Would you sing it to me again?
Oh, now.
Please.
All right.
The blonde waits while the lovers coo. She hears the man singing.
You are my inspiration, Eileen. A perfect combination, Eileen. Your eyes, your hair are beyond compare. So is it any wonder you captured me, and now I'm under your spell, Eileen?
I do hate to interrupt, but would you mind hanging up, please? Who's that?
The other half of my party line. Just ignore her, she'll go away.
You have been on this phone for half an hour. I've got an important call to make.
I happen to consider this an important call.
What, singing to a girl at 9 o'clock in the morning?
It's none of your business what he does to me, or when.
Would you please get off this line?
The blonde stalks off. She scurries to the kitchen. She takes a pitcher from the fridge. She picks up a glass from an overhead cupboard and pours out a measure of tomato juice. She adds Worcester sauce and Tabasco to the glass of juice. She is about to hurry out when she stops and looks at the phone. She picks up the receiver. A different woman is chatting to the man.
I know it is early, Chérie, but I just had to talk to you. Will I see you tonight?
Oh, I'm sorry, Yvette. I have to work.
Oh.
I have 6 songs to write for the new show.
But you'll have to go out and eat dinner, no?
Oh, I'll throw something together here.
Oh, no, darling, you mustn't. You must keep up your strength. I'll come over and cook something for you, yes?
Well, if you like.
Thank you, darling.
It's nothing.
Brad?
Hmm?
sing me a little of our song?
That.
Please.
Tu es mon inspiration, Yvette. Une parfaite combination, Yvette.
Will you please get off this phone? Who is that woman?
Some little eavesdropper on my party line. She's always listening in. That's how she brightens up her drab, empty life.
If I could get a call through once in a while, my life wouldn't be so drab.
She slams the phone down and storms off. The blonde, dressed in furs and a muff, waits for the elevator. The elevator crawls up to her floor. The blonde rolls her eyes in exasperation.
Must you zoom up so fast? What are you, jet-propelled or something?
Morning, Al. The laundry man's coming by today, and would you please tidy up the cupboards for me? Oh, would you call the office and tell him I'll be a little bit late?
That's a peach of a hangover she's got this morning.
I'm afraid so.
Why does she have to go out and get stoned every night?
Oh, I don't know, Harry. Maybe she's got a party line.
The blonde stares stony-faced. The elevator man raises his eyebrows as the doors close. The help, a 50-something woman called Al, totters into the blonde's flat and throws off her coat. She makes for the breakfast bar and slurps Worcester sauce into the tomato juice the blonde left for her. She sips the juice and cringes. She removes her hat. There is an ice pack on her head. A pokey office inside a vast office block. An assistant manager spins the blonde a line.
I hope you understand, madam, that your phone company wants everyone to have a private phone. We're putting in new trunk lines as fast as we can, but with all the construction going on, it takes time. We have hundreds of applications which take precedence over yours.
But there must be some way to get one.
Well, if some emergency arose, if you were to become pregnant, for example, why, you'd jump right to the top of our list.
Mr. Conrad, being single, I'm not quite ready for that kind of emergency.
Well, I wouldn't know what else to suggest.
Oh, but I'm at my wit's end, really. You see, I'm an interior decorator, and I do a lot of work at home. And so naturally, there are business calls that I must make, and I cannot get a call through. That man is always on the phone with some woman. Have you any idea what it's like to be on a party line with a sex maniac?
The assistant manager jumps up, open-mouthed in alarm. He rushes to close the office door.
Well, that's a very serious charge, madam. Can you substantiate it?
Well, he sings love songs at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Has he used objectionable language on the phone?
No.
Or threats of any nature?
No.
Has he made immoral overtures to you?
Well, oh, not to me.
And you're bothered by this?
Yes. I mean, no. What do you mean bothered?
His carrying on with all these other women disturbs you.
Mr. Conrad, please believe me, I don't care what he does. I just want him to stop doing it on my phone.
Well, madam, we'll have one of our inspectors stop by and have a talk with him.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
If what you say about this man is true, we may be forced to disconnect him.
Good.
A secretary dials from a plush office.
Haven't you reached John yet? Oh, keep trying. If she doesn't get here soon, that woman is going to drive me out of my mind. Ming Dynasty in a rumpus room. Oh, Mrs. Walters, be careful. This is priceless.
Really? What is it?
A 14th century crematory urn.
A crematory urn? Is anybody in it?
Not at the moment.
Oh, that's good. Then we can drill a hole in the bottom without anyone running out.
A hole?
So we can wire it for a lamp.
Mrs. Walters, we do not wire 14th century crematory urns.
I suppose not.
The blonde dashes down a city street.
Jan! Jan!
Hello, Jonathan.
Hi. I've got something to tell you.
Oh?
I was trying to call you all morning, but your line's been busy.
Oh, naturally.
I just drove her out of the showroom. How do you like it?
It's marvelous.
Like the color?
Oh, it's just...
the upholstery?
Beautiful.
It's yours.
Huh?
In grateful appreciation of the very brilliant job you've been doing on my office.
What? Jonathan. Jonathan, you just don't go around giving girls cars.
I do.
This your comment?
No, it's hers.
Oh.
This your comment?
No, it's his. Jonathan, you're very sweet and very generous, but I cannot accept a gift like this.
Why not?
Well, it's too... It's too personal.
This?
Yes.
If I gave you perfume, if I gave you lingerie, that would be personal, but a car?
Come on, Mac, if it's yours, move it.
Here. Send me the perfume.
Will you be stopping by my office tomorrow?
In the afternoon.
Listen. Are you sure you don't want the car?
Yes, I'm sure, Jonathan. See you tomorrow.
The blonde Jan hurries into a shop called Pirro's, leaving a crestfallen Jonathan.
My analyst will never believe this.
Neither will mine.
Good morning.
Hello.
Mrs. Walters, I'm sorry to be so late.
That's all right, dear. Mr. Pirro and I had a very fruitful morning, didn't we, Mr. P?
Very fruitful.
Good. Well, what are you doing with that?
I picked it out myself. I thought it would go wonderfully well.
Mrs. Walters, a fertility goddess is the last thing you need in Scarsdale.
A fertility goddess? My dear, I had no idea. Now, don't forget, I'm expecting you both at the housewarming tomorrow evening.
We'll be there.
Savage little thing, isn't it?
Joan removes her hand from the statue.
Oh, that woman has the taste of a water buffalo.
Well, then why do business with her?
Because she happens to be a very rich water buffalo. But if you ever leave me alone with her again... Where were you? I tried to reach you all morning.
Oh, lover boy got started very early today.
Really, Jim, there must be some way to get a private line. Tell them it's an emergency.
Thank you, Mr. P. I've reported him to the phone company.
It's about time.
They're sending an inspector over. As far as I'm concerned, whatever Mr. Allen gets, he has coming to him.
Good.
Brad Allen's flat. A suave, dark-haired man, Brad Allen, is tinkling the ivories. The doorbell rings.
Mr. Allen, I'm from the telephone company.
Well, hello.
I'm the...
Yes?
I'm Miss Dickinson. I'm an inspector.
What would you like to inspect?
You. We've received a complaint about you.
Oh, well, I've never had any complaints before. Won't you come in?
Thank you.
An overawed Miss Dickinson wanders into the flat. She flirts with Brad Allen. The elevator outside Jan's apartment crawls up to the floor. The doors open, Alice clinging to the rail. She staggers as the elevator comes to a full stop.
You don't have to break the sound barrier, you hot rodder.
She sways down the corridor. She fumbles for the key.
Well, heard from the phone company. I'm the one who can't get a call through, and they sent me this. Listen, your complaint has been found to be completely unwarranted and untruthful. According to our inspector, Miss Dickinson... Did you believe that? They sent a woman. It's like sending a marshmallow to put out a bonfire. Here, read it for yourself.
You know I never get into focus until 10 o'clock.
Our inspector found Mr. Allen to be extremely cooperative. I'll just bet he was. Hello?
Miss Morrow? My name is Brad Allen.
Yes?
I've been advised by the phone company that there's a code number for our party line. It's 793. Now, if you have any future complaints to make, I suggest you dial it and complain to me personally.
Why, Mr. Allen, if I hadn't complained, the inspector would never have found out how cooperative you are.
Miss Morrow, why are you so fascinated with my personal affairs?
I'm not fascinated, Mr. Allen. Revolted.
You don't see me going down to the phone company complaining about your affairs.
I have none to complain about.
It figures.
What do you mean it figures?
Well, obviously, you're a woman who lives alone, doesn't like it.
I happen to like living alone.
Look, I don't know what's bothering you, but don't take your bedroom problems out on me.
I have no bedroom problems. There's nothing in my bedroom that bothers me.
Oh, that's too bad.
Mr. Allen... Let's try to be adult about this and work out some sort of schedule where I can make my business calls and you can make your... whatever you call the calls you make. Now, From the hour to the half hour, the phone will be yours. From the half hour to the hour, it will be mine. Should either of us receive a call during the other's half hour, he or she will terminate the conversation as quickly as possible. In emergencies, each will exercise a little tolerance. How does that sound?
Like a report from the United Nations.
You mean you disagree?
No. It might work.
Well, I hope so. I understand that we're going to have to share this party line for at least another month. We'll just have to try living with one another.
Well?
I was waiting for you to make some off-color remark.
Miss Morrow, is that all you have on your mind?
Never mind my mind. You stick to your half hour and I'll stick to mine.
Jan flings down the phone. A grinning Al drops the breakfast bar phone down.
He makes pretty good sense.
Were you listening in again?
Yes, ma'am.
Alma, have you no shame?
No, ma'am. He's brightened up many a dreary afternoon for me.
What did he say that makes such good sense?
If there's anything worse than a woman living alone, it's a woman saying she likes it.
Well, I do like it. I have a good job, a lovely apartment. I go out with very nice men to the best places.
The theater?
The finest restaurant? What am I missing?
When you have to ask, believe me, you're missing it.
Well, what is a girl supposed to do? Go out in the street and ask the first man she meets to come home with her?
No, don't do that, ma'am. It don't work.
Bedroom problems.
Jan sits down in front of the dressing table.
Bedroom problems?
She appraises her face.
Over here, please. Just sit down. No, the other way. Please. Thank you very much. How's it look?
You look beautiful.
Oh, Jonathan, no, really. Do you like it or...
Whatever you like, I like.
Jen, why won't you marry me?
Jonathan, I don't love you.
Well, that's absurd.
Oh.
Well, I'm young, I'm rich, I'm healthy... I'm good looking. I'm very good looking. I've got everything.
Including three ex-wives.
Oh, that's what it is. Jan, please don't hold that against me. Those marriages were just a revolt against my mother. I'm trying to work it out. I'm trying to find out why I dislike her so. I've been talking to this psychiatrist about my mother for 2 years now.
And?
It's perfectly healthy. He dislikes her as much as I do. And he's from Vienna. This time it'll be different, Jan. You'll see. We'll go to Mexico. It'll be like starting from scratch. I've never been married in Mexico.
Jonathan, I just don't happen to love you.
Well, how do you know? Love isn't an opinion. It's a chemical reaction. We've never even kissed.
Jan stands, arms folded. Jonathan moves in for a quick peck on the lips. Jan keeps her lips sealed. She's straight-faced.
Well, they didn't hit the moon with the first missile shot either.
Oh, Jonathan. I guess that's what I want. To hit the moon. Well,
I tell you what, let's have dinner tonight, and then we can try another countdown.
Can't do it. I have to go to a housewarming party tonight, one of our clients.
Well, I'll call you tomorrow, then. I can never get through that busy signal.
Oh, call between the half hour and the hour.
How come?
I've signed a ceasefire with my party line.
Jan, marry me, and I'll smother you with private phones.
I'd better leave. That kind of talk could sweep a girl off her feet.
Al is on the phone in Jan's flat. She sighs wistfully.
Hi, Al. Any calls?
Shh. It's him.
Mr. Allen, you're on my half hour.
Party pooper.
Jan smiles.
Hello?
Don't ever do that again.
Mr. Allen, we made an agreement. You were on my time.
All right. So I overlap by a few measly minutes. What am I supposed to do when somebody calls me? Be as rude as you are?
Have you anything else to say?
Yes. Get off my back, lady. Stop living vicariously in what you think I do. There are plenty of warm rolls in the bakery. Stop pressing your nose against the window.
Brad storms off.
Come on in, Jonathan. The door's open.
Hi, Brad. How's the show going? Got any more songs ready?
Almost.
Hi. Well, fine. Let's hear them.
Not now, Jonathan. I'm going out. I'm in a hurry.
Now, just a minute, my boy. I'm putting up $200,000 for this show. We've got a theater deadline to meet.
Jonathan, you're hounding me.
No, I
don't know. Money seems to have lost its value these days. With $200,000, my grandfather cornered the wheat market and started a panic in Omaha. Today, you can't even frighten songwriters with it.
Well, that's inflation for you, Jonathan. Pour yourself a scotch.
Thanks. Trouble with you is you're prejudiced against me because I'm part of a minority group.
What minority group?
Millionaires. You outnumber us, but you'll never get us. We'll fight for our rights to the bitter end. We've got the money to do it.
Why, Jonathan, you sound absolutely bitter.
Well, you don't know what this show means to me. Now, look at us. We went through college together. You worked your way through. You've become an important songwriter. You've had a couple of big Broadway hits. You started out with nothing, and you've really made something out of yourself. Me, I started out in college with $8 million, and I've still got $8 million. I just can't seem to get ahead.
Who's the girl?
What girl?
Oh, come on now, you can't kid me. I've been through three marriages with you.
Like a fighter. You're only ambitious when you're getting ready to climb into the ring.
Yeah. Well, there is a girl. Mm. Brad, she is the sweetest. She is the loveliest. She's the most talented person I've ever met.
That's what you said when you married that stripper.
She was not a stripper. She was an exotic dancer with trained doves.
When's the happy occasion?
Well, I don't know for sure. She claims she doesn't want to marry me. Well, that's what all my wives said at first. Mind if I call her up?
No, go right ahead. What's her name?
Jan.
Brad stops in his tracks.
Jan?
Who?
Jan.
Oh, no. I can't tell you. I may be neurotic, but I'm not crazy.
The line is engaged.
Busy. I can never get her on the phone. She shares a party line with some nut.
It couldn't be. Or could it?
What kind of a nut? Some guy with a phone fetish. She had to make a deal with him where they use it on alternate half hours.
It's ridiculous.
Brad strolls down the steps.
Pretty girl, huh?
Yeah. Good figure.
Hmm.
And you won't tell me who she is?
That's right.
I found this gold mine. I'm not going to tell an old claim jumper like you how to get to it.
You sly dog, you.
Still busy. I must be on the wrong half hour. Brad, as a friend...
Sit down, boy.
As a friend, I only hope one day you find a girl like this. You ought to quit all this chasing around. Get married.
Why?
Why? You're not getting any younger, fella. Oh, sure, it's fun, it's exciting. Dancing, nightclubbing with a different doll every night. But there comes a time when a man wants to give up that kind of life.
Why?
Because he wants to create a stable, lasting relationship with one person. Brad, believe me, there is nothing in this world so wonderful, so fulfilling, as coming home to the same woman every night.
Why?
Because that's what it means to be adult. A wife, a family, a house. A mature man wants those responsibilities.
Why?
Well, if you want to, you can find tricky arguments against anything. I gotta get out of here. What have you got against marriage, anyway?
Jonathan, before a man gets married, he's like a tree in the forest. He stands there independent, an entity unto himself. And then he's chopped down. His branches are cut off, he's stripped of his bark, and he's thrown into the river with the rest of the logs. Then this tree is taken to the mill. And when it comes out, it's no longer a tree. It's the vanity table, the breakfast nook, the baby crib, and the newspaper that lines the family garbage can.
No. Now, if this girl weren't something extra special, then maybe I'd agree with you. But with Jan, you look forward to having your branches cut off. Well, I gotta be going.
Brad puts his hands on his hips.
Listen, remember, I need those songs.
I'll have him in your office on Monday.
Good man.
Hello?
Miss Morrow, this is Brad. Alan. I've just gone through an agonizing reappraisal of our situation, and I'm not very proud of myself. I have used the phone too much, and I've been extremely rude. I'd like to apologize for the way I've been acting, and I thought we could get together. Have a cup of coffee, maybe. Get acquainted. We might find we have a lot in common.
Mr. Allen, we have nothing in common. Not that meeting you mightn't prove, amusing. But frankly, some jokes are just too obvious to be funny.
A redhead in a flimsy blue dress sips from a cocktail glass while Brad serenades her.
Bradley, honey?
Shh. Almost got it. There.
I can't believe it. A song for little old me.
Brad takes a sip from the cocktail glass the redhead proffers. He hands the glass back. The redhead fingers it. Brad caresses the keys and gazes adoringly at the redhead.
You are my inspiration, Marie. A perfect combination, Marie. Your eyes, your hair are beyond compare. So is it any wonder you captured me, and now I'm under your spell, Marie.
Oh, Brad.
What a pity you have to leave so soon.
Yes, I have a very early appointment in the morning.
Oh, you know, everyone thinks the house is heaven.
Really? Oh, I'm so glad.
A fresh-faced lad, Tony, saunters in.
Good evening, Mother. How's the party going?
Oh, lovely, dear. Miss Morrow, I want you to meet my son, Tony.
Hello. Tony?
Tony's graduating from Harvard this summer. He's Phi Beta Kappa, you know.
Oh,
Mother, it's not that big a deal.
If Tony has one fault, it's that he's too modest. You needn't wait for a cab, Jan. Tony can drive you into town.
Oh, no, I wouldn't want to impose, really.
I'd be delighted to, Miss Morrow.
Thank you.
I do hope Mr. P will feel better in the morning.
I'm sure he will. It was a marvelous party.
Thank you, dear.
I'll talk to you soon.
Yes,
good night.
Good night.
It won't be long, Mother.
Filthy rich Mrs. Walters watches her son Tony escort Jen to his toy car.
Tony! Don't drive too fast!
I won't, Mother.
Jen waves. Tony guns the car and skids it round the driveway. In Brad's apartment...
What time do you have to be back to the Copa for the next show?
Don't worry, darling. We just got oodles and oodles of time.
Marie and Brad sprawl over the sofa and kiss. Brad flicks a switch. A record drops into place on the turntable and the door locks. The needle moves across to play the grooves. Brad kisses Marie passionately. Tony's car is parked up in a quiet spot. Tony is pouring jam.
Tony, please.
Jan, you're so primitive.
Oh, Tony, control yourself. Remember, you're a Harvard man.
Not tonight, baby. I'm on vacation.
Oh, stop it. Only 21.
I dig older women.
Oh! I've never seen a boy with so many arms before. Tony, so help me, I'm going to tell your mother.
It's your word against mine.
Look! I've never belted a Phi Beta Kappa.
Okay, okay, I'll take you home.
Okay.
Only promise to stop and have one drink with me.
No. All right. Ah! I'm certainly in no condition for this. But now, will you please start this car?
Tony revs the car. In a crowded flamenco club, Copa del Rio. Brad and Marie sweep in. A waiter and a DJ escorts them past the dance floor into a white upholstered booth. In the adjoining booth sit the youthful, amorous Tony and Jan. Brad and Marie take their seats. The waiter disappears before Brad can issue instructions.
Come on, drink up.
You're still on your first one.
Tony, your mother is going to be terribly worried about you. Now, what do you say I pour you into a cab and send you home, huh?
You know something? You are being very uncooperative.
Oh.
Oh, come on, Jen. Finish your drink. It's very nourishing.
Will you please stop trying to get me drunk?
Drunk? I'll have you know a Harvard man never resorts to getting a woman drunk, except in an emergency. And you, Miss Morrow, are an emergency.
Tony, I want you to get the check and let's get out of here, and I mean it.
No. I categorically refuse.
All right. You can stay till AA comes for you. I am leaving.
No, wait. Just one dance and I'll go home, I promise.
I don't believe you.
Scout's on it.
A drunken Tony takes Jen by the waist. He lurches around the floor. Brad watches as Jen wiggles her hips.
So that's the other end of your party line.
Tony spins Jen, who totters straight in front of Brad. She stares at Brad.
How are you going to get on friendly terms with that?
Anything wrong, darling?
No. No.
Brad snaps out of the intense look, clutches Marie's hand and gazes longingly into her eyes. He spies the time.
Shouldn't you be getting into your costume?
Well, it's not much to get into, honey lamb.
I know. But, I want you to look especially nice tonight.
I want you to.
Brad glances across at Jen.
Brad, my boy, you haven't got a chance. The minute you tell her who you are but dead.
Brad sits down and gawks. Marie waves coyly from the restaurant entrance. Brad gives a perfunctory wave.
But maybe you don't have to tell her. Haunted lamb.
Tony and Jen twirl on the dance floor. Tony staggers.
You all right?
I don't feel so good. Do you mind if we sit this one out?
No, of course not.
Thank you.
Tony sits on the floor. He keels over. Despairingly, Jan catches Brad's eye. He fakes a Texas accent.
Excuse me, ma'am. Reckon I got a mite too close in here for your partner.
Oh, yes. I wonder if you would ask a couple of waiters to help get him outside.
Why, shucks, ma'am. No need to call anybody else. Why? Come on, boy. Ups a daisy.
I can't tell you how embarrassing this is, Mr.
Stetson, ma'am. Rex Stetson. No call to be embarrassed.
I'm afraid he's had too much to drink.
We have a saying back in Texas, ma'am. Never drink anything stronger than you are. Or older. Your coat, ma'am?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I reckon we better get your boyfriend home.
Oh, he's not my boyfriend. No, his mother is a client of mine.
Client? Mm-hmm. You a lawyer or something?
No, I'm an interior decorator.
You are?
He was driving me home and insisted on stopping for a drink.
But don't tell me this young fellow was trying to force his attentions upon you.
Well?
Well, that's one thing I can't stand, man. A man who tries to take advantage of a woman. We make short work of his kind back in Texas. I can tell you.
Into a yellow cab.
2268 Gardner Drive, Scarsdale. Please.
Drive him slow and set him down real easy, partner.
Brad gives the cabbie a few notes.
How are you getting home, man? Thank you.
Oh, well, I thought that I would take his car and then he could pick it up tomorrow.
It's mighty late for a young lady to be out driving alone.
It's not very far.
I'd feel a lot better if you'd let me see you home.
Brad and Jen stroll off. Jen points out Tony's car.
Oh, sit.
This pity thing?
Mm-hmm.
Why, back home, we got jackrabbits bigger than this.
Brad helps Jen into the car. He tries to clamber in, but is so tall that he cannot squeeze into the gap between the seat and the roof. He wriggles around, then surrenders.
How do you get into this thing?
Well, it's a bit tricky. I think you better put your right leg in first.
Oh, yeah.
Brad crams his right leg into the car.
Now sit down.
Where?
In the seat.
Yeah.
He forces his head under the soft top roof. He tries to shut the door, but his left leg is trailing out of the car.
Can't you get your other leg in?
Hope so, ma'am. Sure hate to leave without it.
Can you drive?
Well, I think I can manage a steering, but somebody else will have to work the pedals.
I think we should call a cab.
I think so, too.
All right.
Brad drags his left leg over the steering wheel. He is well and truly stuck.
Ma'am? They might have to call the automobile club. Help get me out of this thing.
In the cab.
You look so funny.
There wasn't a thing I could do.
What a marvelous looking man. I wonder if he's single.
I don't know how long I can get away with this act, but she's sure worth a try.
They smile at each other.
Well, don't just sit there like a bump on a log. Make some casual conversation. It's a lovely evening, isn't it?
Oh, yes, ma'am, it sure is.
You married?
Uh-oh.
You idiot. What are you trying to do, scare the man away?
No, ma'am, I'm not. This may take some fancy broken field running. All those buildings filled with people. Kind of scares a country boy like me, you know it?
Isn't that sweet? So unpretentious and honest. What a relief after a couple of monsters like Tony Walters and that Brad Allen.
Jan's face tightens, then softens into a smile at Brad's gaze.
Everybody had large families but me, ma'am. I'm the only child.
Really? There were six of us at home. Four brothers and two sisters.
Well, that's what I call a nice-sized family, ma'am. Mm-hmm. That's something you don't see much of anymore.
Well, I believe in large families, don't you?
Oh, yes, indeed. Seems like folks nowadays just stopped having kids. May I, ma'am?
Thank you. I guess it's the high cost of living.
Or else television. Between the Late Late Show at night and Dave Garraway in the morning, why, seems like there ain't much time.
Jan widens her eyes in amazement.
Would you like to come in for some coffee?
Oh, no, ma'am. I ain't used to these hours. Why, back home, we'd be just about getting up now.
Oh.
Well, it's been a real pleasure, ma'am. Night.
Good night. Don't let him walk away without your phone number, you goof. You might never see him again. Oh, Mr. Stetson.
Ma'am?
Seeing's how you're all alone in New York, well, if there's anything you need and I can be of some help, my number is Plaza 2, 2748.
22748. I'll remember that. Bye.
Bye.
I'd say 5 or 6 dates ought to do it.
It's so nice to meet a man you feel you can trust.
Jan smiles and shuts her apartment door.
He obviously respected you. He didn't even try to kiss you. Or maybe you just don't appeal to him. He didn't write your number down. Oh, why didn't you think to ask where he was staying? Hello?
Ma'am, this is Rex Stetson.
Oh, hello.
I hope I didn't wake you up.
Oh, not at all.
Well, I was just lying here thinking about your generous offer and all. And to call you in case there was anything I needed.
Uh-huh.
Well, I need to go out to dinner tomorrow night, and I sure would enjoy seeing a friendly face across the table. Of course, you're going to be busy tomorrow night.
Oh, no, I always keep tomorrow night open. I mean, I hadn't planned a thing.
Oh, I'd love to have dinner with you.
Hello, hello, hello. Is anybody on this line?
Yes, I am on the line. Would you please get off it?
All right, but you're on my half hour.
Ooh. Rex? Rex, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. Who was that?
Oh, my party line. A horrible little man.
He sure isn't very well mannered.
Mannered? He isn't even worth talking about. Now, what were you saying?
I'll be stopping by about 7:30.
All right. That'll be fine.
Miss Mara?
Uh-huh.
I've never been much on making fancy speeches, but I get a nice, warm feeling being near you, ma'am. It's like being around a pot-bellied stove on a frosty morning.
Oh, Rex, what a lovely thing to say.
Well, night, ma'am.
Good night.
Jen grins like the Cheshire Cat. She snuggles in her bed.
Like a pot-bellied stove on a frosty morning. He does like you. Hello?
Miss Morrow, Brad Allen. Oh. Hello? Hello?
Yes?
I couldn't help overhearing part of your conversation.
I'm sure you couldn't.
And sharing a phone together, I feel a certain responsibility for you. Now look, take my advice. Don't go out with that man tomorrow night. He's a phony. Of course, it's none of my business.
Oh, that's right, Mr. Allen. It is none of your business.
Okay. Only don't let that yokelak fool you. This ranch hand Romeo's just trying to lure you into the nearest barn.
Don't judge other people by yourself.
All right, if you won't take a friendly warning. But I can tell you exactly what he'll do tomorrow night. He'll take you to dinner, dancing, and then he'll find some excuse to stop off at his hotel room for a moment. And that, Miss Morrow, is where the payoff comes.
Good night, Mr. Allen.
She holds the phone down and snaps out the light.
Hmm.
Jen and Brad sip cocktails over dinner. They swirl round the dance floor. A bored Brad looks into the distance until he sees Jen's shining face smiling up at him. He smiles. Brad drives Jen in his convertible.
Well, this is it.
This is what?
My hotel. You don't mind if we stop out for a minute, do you? Get my coat. It's a little bit chilly out.
Uh-oh, the payoff.
Brad opens his hotel door for a glum-faced Jen.
One thing you gotta get in New York. Nice, big hotel rooms. And, mighty comfortable beds. Come on over here.
Jen looks at him in alarm. She walks over, her face morose.
Ain't that a pretty view, Central Park?
Brad curls back the curtain.
Mighty romantic, ain't it? Well, let's go.
Jen's face lights up again.
You really came up here for your coat?
What'd you think I came up for, ma'am?
Well, I thought...
Thought what, ma'am?
Well, I thought you brought me up here to...
Oh, ma'am.
I'm sorry, Rex. I should have known that you're not like the others. But I had to make sure. Will you forgive me?
Of course, ma'am. I guess I can't blame you. Living in bear country is bound to make you wonder about strange caves. Now, let's go for that drive. This way, ma'am.
Oh, I thought we were going for a drive.
We are. Back home style.
A horse and carriage awaits them.
Are know something? Whenever I want to feel close to home, the only thing that helps is getting behind a horse.
There's something so wholesome about a man who loves animals.
I hope this stupid horse knows where he's supposed to go.
Hangs onto the reins like a subway strap. I don't know what he's up to, but I'm sure glad she ain't my daughter.
A black tie restaurant.
Now, over here is a ranch house. Right here is a corral. It's where I keep my ponies. And over here, behind the ranch house, is a mountain. Ain't a very big mountain, but it's ours.
Texas must be a wonderful place.
Oh, yes, ma'am. It is. It is.
Brad's eyes slide over to the door. He spots their mutual friend, Jonathan Forbes. He glances at Jan, who is blissfully unaware. He pats his pockets.
I seem to be out of cigarettes. I wonder if you'd excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Bye now.
Bye.
He dashes past the tables and sees Jonathan depositing his coat in the cloakroom. He steals a look back at Jan, who is smiling. He heads for the cloakroom. Jonathan is speaking to the attendant. He looks off to his side and spies a phone box. He grabs the phone and pretends to make a call.
Fred, you gotta come down here and help me out. Fred, I'll make you a deal. If you come down here and take her off my hands, Fred! Hey, Brad. Fred who? Why, Jonathan, old pal. Good to see you, boy.
Sarah, you forgot your check.
Oh, thanks, Kathy.
Come on in. There's somebody here I want you to meet.
Yeah? Who?
This girl. Friend of the family. She's visiting here.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful girl.
Uh-huh.
But I wanted to work on those songs of yours tonight and... Say, why don't you take her over for the rest of the evening?
Me?
Yeah, take her dancing, maybe. She's dying to learn how to dance.
Right. She doesn't know how to dance?
Well, naturally, she doesn't get out of the house very often.
What do you mean, naturally?
Jonathan, believe me, you and Moose, I mean Miss Taggett, will get along...
Moose!
Oh, right. So a girl picks up a nickname. You know how cruel kids can be. Especially to someone who's a little different.
No, no, just a minute. How different?
Well, just... different, you know.
Wait. Is that the one right there? Yeah.
How can you tell?
Brad waves cheerily behind Jonathan's back. The redhead jiggles her fork in Brad's direction.
See? Nice and friendly she is.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan?
Are you kidding?
Jonathan, you gotta help me out.
Sorry, pal. It's your moose. Happy hunting.
Brad's face breaks into a relieved smile.
Yes, indeedy.
Blurring the New York sights, from Wall Street to yacht trips around Manhattan to the Statue of Liberty. And at night, they tour Times Square with all its theatres and shows. They party at Madison Square Gardens, the Latin Quarter and Basin Street. The elevator crawls its way up to Jan's floor. Al stands upright and tries to move, forgetting that she's clinging to her brolly, which is hooked onto the rail. The attendant frees the brolly.
Evening.
Al teeters to Jan's door. Jan is soaping herself in a foamy bath.
Hello?
Morning, Miss Mara. This is Rex.
Oh, good morning, Rex.
Ma'am, you done did a terrible thing to me.
Oh?
You made me glad I ain't in Texas.
Have I?
Mm-hmm. Every time I look at you, I say to myself, we got all kinds of natural resources back home, but we ain't got nothing like that.
Oh, Rex.
Tell you something else, too. I kind of hated New York when I first came here. All those people seem so distant now. Don't feel that way now.
Oh, that's good.
Sure turned out to be a friendly town.
You'll find that most people are willing to meet you halfway. If you let them.
Am I going to see you tonight?
Oh, I'd love to, Rex, but I already have a date tonight.
Who with?
A client. You don't know him. Jonathan Forbes.
Of course, you ain't the kind of guy that'd break a date.
No, I'm not.
And I ain't the kind of guy that'd ask you to.
I know you're not.
I'll pick you up at 8.
I'll be ready. Oh, what a day. Good morning, Alma. Isn't it a beautiful day?
You can't go by me. I haven't seen it yet. Okay, I'll take your word for it. He must be pretty special if you'd break a date for him.
Jan slaps her hand on the bar and grins.
He is. What's he like?
Well, he's 6'6". Handsome. Intelligent. Owns a mountain.
Well, don't just stand there making with the toast. Get that robe off and go get him.
What?
6'6" of opportunity doesn't come along every day, you know.
Alma, I hardly know the man.
Takes only one sip of wine to tell if it's a good bottle.
Jan scrutinizes Al, who is sipping tea.
This is a good bottle.
Well, what are you waiting for? Drink up.
Jan, answer me. Are you evading my question?
I'll have these initialed if you like.
Why did you break our date? Now tell the truth, because you got another date, huh? Go ahead, tell me. You're going out with someone else, right?
Right.
That's a terribly cruel thing to say. Who is he? What's his name?
Rex Stetson.
Do I know him?
No. He's visiting here from Texas.
Texas? Mm-hmm. Oh, Jan, how could you? How could you ever fall in love with a tourist?
I don't know. I just did.
You admit it. You just said it. You love him.
I did, didn't I?
As many times as I'll be married, I'll never understand women. What a blow to my psyche to be rejected for a cowboy.
He's not a cowboy.
All right, an oil man. Jan, if you marry him, you'll have to live out there. Look at that. New York! People jostling, shoving, struggling, milling, fighting for their lives. And you're part of it. In Texas, there's nothing but a bunch of prairie dogs and stuff. And even the air out there, there's nothing in it but air. In New York, you've got air you can sink your teeth into. It has character. Jan, you can't live in Texas.
Jonathan, we haven't even talked about marriage.
Yeah, but it's that look in your eye. I've been married often enough to know when a girl's willing to talk about it.
Do I look willing?
You look absolutely disgusting. I'm sorry. You know me, I say an awful lot of things I don't mean. I just want you to be happy. It's Rex Stetson you want. I hope it's Rex Stetson you get.
Brad saunters out of an office elevator. His face drops as he sees Jan and Jonathan appear out of Jonathan's office. He looks for an out. He helps through a door marked AC Maxwell MD Obstetrics. He observes Jan waving goodbye to Jonathan and quickly shuts the door. He wanders into the room and takes a seat between a lady knitting and a woman clutching a handbag. A receptionist types furiously.
Excuse me.
May I help you?
Yes. I'd like to make an appointment for an examination.
For your wife?
No, I'm not married. It's for myself.
You mean you want the doctor to examine you?
Yes. I haven't been feeling too well. Probably just an upset stomach, but, fella can't be too careful.
I'll tell the doctor you're here.
Oh, well, there's no need to break in on him. I let it go this long. I can put it off another few minutes.
No, I'm sure he'll be very anxious to see you.
But
When she gets back, tell her I'm feeling much better. It's probably just a false alarm.
The women look at each other in wonder.
Where is he?
He must have just gone.
Excuse me. The man said he was going to have a baby, and you let him get away?
But he was obviously a psychopath.
What if he weren't?
But Dr. Maxwell...
Miss Resnick, medical science still has many unknown regions to explore.
Look, you're the detective agency. All I know is that his name is Rex Stetson and he's from Texas. I want all the information you can get on him. You've helped me get divorced 3 times. Now let's see if you can get me married once. What? Oh, all right, if it'll save any time, I'll be right over.
Yes?
Mr. Allen's here to see
you. I can't see him.
Sure you can. I herewith present you 3 solid gold hits on.
Leave them on my desk.
Where are you going?
Remember that gal I told you about? Jan?
Who?
Jan, the one with the party line with the nut?
Oh, yeah. What about her?
Well, she meets this stupid cowboy from Texas, of all places, and she falls for him.
How do you know?
She told me so, but don't worry, I'll break it up.
You will?
Yeah.
How?
Leave it to me. I don't know how fast he moves, but it takes an early bird to get the best of a worm like me.
Jan fastens up her cape.
Hello?
Miss Morrow, Brad Allen.
Look, I am in a hurry, Mr. Allen, so if you don't mind.
Of course. But before you hang up, just admit I was right.
About what?
Your Western gentleman. He turned out to be a prairie wolf, didn't he?
Mr. Allen, this may come as a shock to you, but there are some men who don't end every sentence with a proposition.
Oh, come on. You mean he didn't try to get you up to his hotel room?
Yes, he took me to his hotel room.
Uh-huh.
He showed me Central Park, and then we left.
And nothing else?
Nothing.
Hmm. That's even worse than I thought.
Worse? What do you mean worse?
Oh, well, must I spell it out? Either you're not telling the truth,
Or what?
Well, there are some men who just, they're very devoted to their mothers. You know, the type that likes to collect cooking recipes or exchange bits of gossip.
Ooh, what a vicious thing to say.
Oh, I hope I'm wrong, but don't you think you better make sure?
You are sick!
Why, this isn't Rex Stetson, this is...
The detective shows Jonathan a picture.
My best friend. Yep, they're usually the ones.
Oh, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. Hello? It's for you.
Thank you. Graham? Uh-huh. Oh, good work. Get your coat, Mr. Forbes.
Why?
I've had one of my men tailing him. He and the girl just went into a little club known as the Hidden Door.
The Hidden Door? Should have listened to my psychiatrist. He told me never to trust anyone but him.
A woman in a sky blue dress plays the piano.
Is this Roly Poly?
Yes, it is.
Oh, I love it.
There's a guy in this old town, I'm telling you, a fact. He measures 5 feet up and down and 5 feet front and back.
He's a fat one.
Roly Poly, baby, please, and as they come. He's a Roly Poly, baby.
Everybody. Come on, Miss Morrow, you know this.
I don't know all the
Go
words.
Go ahead, Jan, sing.
When I first laid eyes on him, I laughed just like the rest. The more I saw, the more of him, the more I liked him best. Got a Roly Poly baby, point to him with pride. He's my Roly Poly baby,
I'm satisfied.
I call him
Yaya Roly Poly, Yaya Roly Poly, Yaya Roly Poly, Yaya Roly Poly, Yaya Roly, Yaya Poly, Yaya Roly Poly.
Come on, sing another one.
Another one?
Just to put my arms around him takes about a week. But when I get my arms around, we cuddle cheek to cheek. Got a Roly Poly baby, sweet as that. He is just a Roly Poly, but so am I.
I call her
Yaya Roly Poly, Yaya Roly Poly,
that fun?
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Brad sneaks Jan a sideways glance.
Tell me about your job. It must be very exciting working with all them colors and fabrics and all.
Jan stares at Brad. She is deep in thought. She watches the way Brad raises his little finger when he drinks.
Rex.
She opens her mouth to speak, but nothing comes out.
Would you like some dip?
I'd love to. Thank you.
Jan hands over the dip and chips.
Ain't these tasty? I wonder if I could get the recipe. Sure would like to surprise my ma when I go back home.
Rex. Don't you find me attractive?
Why, yes, ma'am. Of course.
Well, then why haven't you ever...
Ever what?
I'm sorry, I feel so foolish.
Well, no, go ahead. What's on your mind?
Well, in all the times that we've been going out together, you've been a perfect gentleman.
Oh, I hope I have.
Well, you have. Oh, and I appreciate it, Rex. I really do. But...
Yes?
Well, being such a perfect gentleman and all, it's not very flattering.
Oh, well, ma'am, I wouldn't want to do anything that might spoil our friendship.
A disappointed Jan swallows and averts her gaze.
Is that all it is with us? Friendship?
Ma'am, that's a direct question. I think it deserves a direct answer.
Brad leans forward and kisses Jan.
I need no atmosphere, no day in June. I need no rocket ship, no trip to the moon.
The pianist stops playing and singing.
Excuse me. I'd better go to the powder moon. I mean room. Fix my lipstick.
All that I need is just an armful of you.
As Jan hurries to the powder room, Jonathan and the private detective walk into the hidden door. They scour the room.
There's our man.
Yes, I know.
The detective steps forward.
I can handle it from here. Need a light, cowboy? When you're heading back to the range, Tex?
That's up to you.
You've got 2 minutes. We'll do this nice and clean so no one's embarrassed. When she gets back, you'll say goodbye. You'll put her in a cab. Then we'll go home and you'll pack.
Where am I going?
Connecticut. My summer house is perfect for writing songs. No phone and 20 miles to the nearest girl.
Looks like I haven't much choice.
Sure looks like it. Remember, I'll be watching you.
Jonathan slips away. The piano player glares at Brad. Brad flicks the ash from his cigarette and smirks. Jan returns, all smiles.
Ma'am?
Hello.
You know, I'm sure gonna miss you. Leaving New York and all.
You're leaving?
Mm-hmm.
When?
Tonight. Have to mosey up to Connecticut. Didn't I tell you?
No. No, you didn't.
Oh, well, this friend of mine, a business associate, has a house up there, and he practically forced me to use it. I just couldn't refuse him.
But why must you...
Well, I may be buying the place, and I kind of want to get the feel of it.
Oh. How long will you be away?
The weekend. It's going to be mighty lonely up there.
Brad gazes at Jan longingly.
Ma'am, I don't suppose you'd consider...
Consider what?
No, I'm afraid I couldn't ask you that, ma'am.
Don't be afraid. Ask me.
Well, I... Oh, no, ma'am, it wouldn't be proper.
Rex, we're both over 21. I mean, I certainly should be able to trust you by now.
Ma'am, if I sent you home in a taxi, how long do you think it would take you to get packed up?
About an hour.
45 minutes?
We're wasting time.
The two jump up. Brad helps Jan with her coat. The piano player looks on in disgust.
Lied, you don't, and you'll be sorry. You lied, you hound.
Case. She looks up suddenly and grins. She reaches for the phone at her bedside. She thinks twice and replaces the receiver. The urge is too strong. She lifts the receiver again and dials.
Hello?
Mr. Allen? Just so you'll realize how wrong you are about Rick Stetson, he has just asked me to go away with him for the weekend.
He didn't. Are you going?
That, Mr. Allen, is something you'll never know.
Brad smiles smugly at the receiver. His suitcase is open on the bed.
You are my inspiration, Jan Morrow.
In Brad's lounge, a whistling Jonathan is collecting together a wad of music manuscript. He grabs a cluster of pencils from a jar on top of the piano.
All set?
All set.
Just to make sure you do plenty of scoring up there.
I'll do my best. You better.
Jonathan fastens Brad's briefcase. A chastened Brad puts on his coat. Jonathan beckons him out of the door.
Off you go.
Brad puts his suitcase in the convertible's back seat. Jonathan opens the driver's door. He throws Brad's briefcase in the back. Brad drives off, trying his best not to laugh. Jonathan gives him a salute. Brad and Jan cruise in Brad's convertible. Jan snuggles in the car.
Gosh, I feel guilty. I practically tricked him into taking me along. You know, you've gone out with a lot of men in your time. But this is the jackpot.
You cold?
No, it's wonderful. If he only knew what I was thinking. Hold me tight and kiss me right. I'm yours tonight. My darling, possess me. Tenderly and breathlessly, make love to me, my darling, possess me. Near to me, when you are near to me, my heart forgets to be. Stars that shine make dreams divine. So say you're mine, and my darling, possess me.
Brad slips an arm around Jan's shoulders.
What'd you say?
Hmm?
Didn't you say something?
Who, me?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Oh.
She rests her head against his. They cuddle. Jonathan strides into Jan's apartment block. He approaches the desk clock.
May I help you, sir?
Yes, I've been trying to call, to phone Miss Morrow for some time now. There's been no answer. I just wondered if anything could possibly be wrong.
Oh, I hardly think so, sir. She's just gone to Connecticut for the weekend.
Connecticut?
There's no phone number, but I have a forwarding address.
241 Stony Brook Road?
Why, yes, sir.
And you let her go?
Well, wasn't my place.
No, it's my place. And I helped him pack.
Jonathan storms out. A fire blazes in a stone grate. A bottle of champagne sits on ice. Jan is curled up across Brad's lap. She lets Brad sip her glass of champagne. She takes a sip after him.
Remember when I said that being near you was like being near a pot-bellied stove on a frosty morning?
Yes.
I was wrong.
You were?
More like a forest fire. Completely out of control.
They kiss passionately.
A mountain doesn't belong in the big city.
Mm-mm.
They kiss and embrace. Jan taps his shoulder and pulls away from the embrace. She rearranges her hair and sits uncomfortably on the edge of the sofa.
The fire's nearly out.
Brad gets up and gazes into the flickering flames.
I better get some more logs.
Jan lolls back into the sofa. Brad leans over and kisses her on the lips.
Or later.
He turns away and sees a music score lying on the floor by his overcoat. He picks it up and flings it carelessly onto the table. He is about to walk off when he realizes what the musical score is. He looks quickly at Jan, who is still stretched out on the sofa. He dashes back to the table, picks up the score, and hunts about for somewhere to hide it. He finally pops it into the folds of his overcoat. Jan is sprawled on the couch. Brad sneaks to the door. Jan turns round to watch him.
Hurry back.
Quicker than a cow poke chasing a chalk wagon.
Jan laughs. She gets up off the sofa, the glass of champagne in her hand. She drains the glass as she strolls around the room. She strokes one of the polished wooden chairs and spots Brad's overcoat. She runs her fingers over one sleeve, then grabs hold of the coat. The musical score drops out. She picks it up and takes a quick gander. She leans the score against the piano. She opens out the overcoat, then puts it on. Outside, Brad is collecting logs for the fire. She nestles into the coat, wrapping her arms around herself. Her attention returns to the musical score. She examines it, then rolls up a sleeve on the overcoat. She tries out a few of the keys. She stops as the realization dawns. She scrutinizes the score, then plays the note and listens intently. Brad returns, weighed down with a stack of logs. He saunters in, closing the door with his foot. He joins in with the tune.
Do, 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 do.
He stops abruptly. Jan's eyes widen in horror. Brad half turns. Jan turns to glare at him from the piano stool. She jumps up and hot-foots it to the bedroom. She slams the bedroom door. She reappears carrying her cases and his overcoat. She chucks the overcoat at him.
Please. Stop!
His name isn't Rex Stetson, it's Brad Allen.
I know that.
He's a sneaking, double-crossing rat.
I know that, too. Will you please take me home?
Of course.
Bedroom problems. At least mine can be solved in one bedroom. You couldn't solve yours in 1,000.
At least you could have had the decency to bring your own champagne.
Jonathan storms out. A dejected Brad slumps down beside the fireplace, still holding the logs and overcoat. Jonathan speeds through the darkness. A sign reads New York 80 miles. A glum Jonathan tries to comfort a sobbing Jan. The car ploughs on. A sign reads New York 50 miles. Jan is still weeping and muttering. The car sweeps along the road. A sign reads New York 20 miles. Jan blubbers.
Jan, you've been crying for 60 miles now.
I know it.
Well, don't you think it's about time you start?
I can't.
Jonathan pulls up outside a diner. Jan wails.
Hello.
Oh. Have a cup of coffee and make you feel better. That's all right. Come on. Two coffees, please. Control yourself, Jan.
I've never done anything like this before.
All right, there has to be a first time. Don't have to go to pieces over it.
I'm so ashamed.
Poor kid.
Guy drives a big car with all the optional extras. Thinks he can get away with anything.
I thought we were going to get married.
Forget it.
You're becoming hysterical.
I can't help it.
I hate to do this, Jan, but this is for your own good.
Jonathan slaps her hard across the face. Two men at the bar stare outraged.
You see?
One pats him on the shoulder, then slugs him. Jonathan is knocked out and sinks slowly below the table.
Jonathan!
He crashes to the floor underneath.
Jonathan! Your coffee, Mr. Forbes.
A bruised Jonathan swivels in his chair. His assistant holds the cup in front of him and Jonathan sips the contents through a straw.
Hello, Jonathan. What happened to you?
I was jumped upon by 5 or 6 ruffians.
What?
That's all right, Lawrence. Just put it down. By rights, these loose teeth belong to you. You made her cry. I was only trying to stop her.
Did she cry?
Cry? I never knew a woman that size had that much water in her.
Have you seen her, Jonathan?
No.
Have you talked to her?
No, I've decided to give her up on the advice of my psychiatrist. Also my dentist. Where have you been the last 3 days?
I stayed up there, working on the new songs.
Mm-hmm. What are you done?
This. And this. And
what,
this.
What?
Couldn't come up with a thing. I just sat there, feeling guilty.
Guilty? You? I once saw you work on 3 Sisters at the same time, and you came up with some of your best songs. All of a sudden, why does one girl make you feel guilty?
I don't know. I just do.
Well, what do you know? You're in love. The mighty tree has been toppled. For years, I've been waiting to hear them yell timber over you.
You could be right.
You're down right, I'm right. You love her, and she can't stand the sight of you. That's wonderful. That's what it is. It's wonderful. It almost makes these loose teeth worthwhile. Yeah.
Miss Morrow is here to see you.
Tell her to come in.
Is there a back way out of here?
Ah, we're going to have some fun around here.
Morning, Jonathan.
And?
Here's the painting I was telling you about.
Well, let's get on with the hanging, shall we? I believe you're acquainted with Brad Allen. The X-Rex.
Jan turns her back on Brad.
The end tables are coming at 4 o'clock, Jonathan. I'll see you.
Jan storms out. She slams the door to Jonathan's outer office. She scurries down the corridor.
Jan, wait. Look, I don't blame you for hating me. I'm trying to apologize.
Brad careens out of the ladies. He runs straight into the obstetrician's receptionist.
Excuse me.
She sees the ladies' sign. She stares in disbelief, then dashes back to find her boss.
Well, where did he go?
I don't know, but he came out of there.
And you let him get away again?
Oh, now, surely, Doctor, you don't believe
it. Miss Resnick, a prejudiced viewpoint never advanced the cause of science. Somewhere in this building, there may be a man who has crossed a new frontier. Jonathan, how do I get her back?
You don't. That's the beauty of it. You suffer,
and I watch. Got to be a way. There's got to.
What a delightful situation. The great Brad Allen, chopped down to size, floating down the river with the rest of us now.
When you want to get on friendly terms with a girl, you're nice to her dog.
No dog.
Well, if there's no dog, then you're nice to her mother.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Well, if worse comes to worse, you work on her maid.
Alma? You couldn't get to first base with her.
Alma.
Brad smirks. The doorman holds the door open for Jan's maid, Al. He walks over to Brad and nods in Alma's direction. Brad stuffs a wad of cash into the doorman's hand.
Thanks a lot.
Brad makes a beeline for Al, who is at the bus stop.
Excuse me. May I talk to you?
Yes?
My name is Brad Allen, and I...
Mr. Allen, of course. Get lost. I'd know that voice of yours anywhere.
You know me?
You are my inspiration, Alma.
Oh, the telephone.
I'm one of your most devoted listeners.
Why, thank you.
That's all right.
Oh, well, couldn't we... it's a little chilly out here. Couldn't we stop in and have a drink somewhere?
Oh, no, I don't usually... I might have one just to be sociable.
Good, good. I know a nice little bar right down the street.
I know a better one.
Al grasps Brad's arm. Al drains the vodka bottle. Brad is out for the count.
You ready for another one? No?
No.
Now, let's take this problem from the beginning. You're in love with her, and you want to win her back. First thing you got to do is to get her to talk to you. Right?
Right.
Really very simple. You've got an apartment. She decorates apartments. You hire her to do your place. Two people decorating an apartment, that's pretty intimate. She's got to talk to you. Clever?
Clever.
And once you start talking, it's only a matter of time. Now remember, you hire her to decorate your apartment. Okay?
Okay.
Al drops Brad's head back on the table.
Happy?
Happy.
Would you care for a little snack of some kind?
Brad treads gingerly down his spiral staircase.
Hi there, slugger. This'll fix you up. How do you feel?
Boy, I've had hangovers before, but this time, even my hair hurts.
And you were gonna get her drunk, huh?
I stayed with her through a bottle of scotch. I lost her halfway through the vodka.
This'll fix you up. It's got a lot of olive oil in it.
Brad wrinkles his nose.
State Department could use her. What a party girl she'd make in Moscow.
And two raw eggs.
Oh, go away.
Didn't you find out anything from her?
All I remember is this voice swimming towards me through a sea of scotch. You got an apartment. She decorates apartments. Right?
Right.
Of course. What's the name of that place where she works?
Pierrot's.
But she won't talk to you.
But Perrault will.
You know the number?
Yeah.
Brad groans and holds his head.
Dial it. Oh, not so loud.
What do you think?
Oh, you threw out all my ideas.
Well,
John, I hate to say this, but you were absolutely right. This is much better. Of course, if you repeat that to anyone, you're fired. Tilda, as soon as you get back from the post office, call Brad Allen back and tell him it's impossible. He'll have to get another decorator to do his apartment.
Yes, sir.
Jan drops the design she is working on. She looks on in disbelief.
You mean you're turning him down?
I have to.
But why?
Because I haven't the time to do his place. And I certainly concern you, not with the way you feel about him.
But it's not fair for you to lose a commission because of my personal feelings.
I couldn't subject you to such an experience. It might be, how would you say, traumatic.
Now, that's silly. Now, look. Once I had the mumps. It wasn't very pleasant, but I got over it.
The mumps?
I look upon Brad Allen like any other disease. I've had him. It's over. I'm immune to him.
All right, John. If you think you can handle
it. I certainly can.
It's your decision.
Jan folds her arms. Piero dials Brad's number. He shuts the door to his office.
Mr. Allen? Jill, she's coming over.
Why, Miss Morrow? I was expecting Mr. Perrault.
Mr. Perrault is unavailable at this time. However, if you'd rather wait until he's free...
Oh, no, no, you'll do just fine. Please come in.
Jan walks stiffly in.
It's just that... it's a little embarrassing.
Mr. Allen, I'm a decorator, you're a client. I'm here because you are paying for my professional services. Now, what style did you have in mind?
Nothing in particular. I'm leaving that entirely up to you.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I do my work. living room. Over here is a kitchen, a dining room, over there.
And up here?
The bedroom.
And these?
Light switches.
Just switches.
Aren't they rather inconvenient?
Why, no. The man that lived here before me had very long arms. Over here.
Mr. Allen, if I'm going to redo the apartment, I have to know what everything is for.
Jan flicks a switch. The light goes off, the gramophone sets in motion, and the door locks.
Now, this is the fireplace.
But I'd like to see what the other switch does.
It's just a light switch. I wouldn't pay any attention to it.
Allen, please.
She flicks the other switch. The sofa unfurls to reveal a bed already made up. Jan's face hardens. Brad closes his eyes.
Oh, Jan, I was...
Why redecorate? It's so functional for your purposes.
Not anymore. That's why I want you to redecorate. That bed is the first thing I want you to get rid of. And anything else that you think is in bad taste, throw it out. I want you to make this the type of place that... well... you'd feel comfortable in.
I'll keep that in mind.
Good. Well, you go right ahead and take over, and I'll stay here and do my work.
I'm sorry, Mr. Allen. Once we get started, you'll have to move out. And stay away until I'm finished.
Move out?
The men are going to be working here. You'll just be in the way.
But there might be things that you want to discuss with me.
On a job like this, Mr. Allen, you'll have to give me carte blanche.
But I...
No,
I'll leave. Just do the place the way you'd like it.
I will.
Jan tries the door, which is locked. She keeps trying it. It won't budge. She eyeballs Brad, who smiles weakly. He flicks a switch, the music goes off and the lights come on.
Tilda, call these shops and tell them I'll be coming by, will you? I want to pick up a few things.
But Miss Morrow, we don't deal with any of these shops. Well, you know what their stuff is like.
You bet I do. You should have seen that man's apartment. He's got it down to a science. He pushes a button and the couch becomes a bed with baby blue sheets.
Really?
Ooh. Him, acting so embarrassed. Big phony. It's like a spider, and he expects me to redecorate his web.
Ha! Eileen? Brad. Dear, I want you to be the first to know. I've met this girl, I've fallen in love with her, and I'm planning to marry her. Oh, nonsense, dear. You have everything to live for.
No, it's not nauseating enough. That one, with the two heads.
You're not serious.
Rabbit.
Marie? Brad. Dear, I want you to be the first to know.
With big velour tassels.
Tassels?
Tassels.
Goodbye, my dear.
Brad strikes another woman's name off his epic list. He rips up the obliterated list.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Allen, your apartment will be ready first thing in the morning. Mm-hmm. There's just one final touch. I want to give it. Goodbye.
Jan places the fertility goddess on her desk. Brad and Jonathan trot up the stairs to Brad's apartment.
Behold, Jonathan, the work of a woman in love. Oh, no! I hope you saved those telephone numbers.
Brad dashes in to find a room decorated in garish reds, greens and pinks. The decor resembles a tasteless Middle Eastern boudoir. Jonathan sits in an ornate chair.
Chair, it bit me.
Brad sprints from his apartment. He kicks down the door to Jan's apartment. He scans the lounge briefly, then heads for the bedroom. He draws back the shutters.
Get your clothes on.
You get out of here.
We're going to my apartment.
I've seen it.
You'll see it again. Now put your clothes on.
I won't.
Are you getting out of that bed or am I coming in after you?
You wouldn't dare.
Brad grabs her by the legs and tugs her off the bed, covers phone line and all.
How dare you! Oh, you put me down! I said put me down! I said put me down! What are you doing? Where are you taking me? I'm warning you, you put me down, I'll scream! Oh, good morning, Mrs. Wilson.
Good morning.
Now you put me back in my bed!
John, please.
Harry, would you be so kind as to call the police?
The elevator descends. Jan is still flailing in Brad's arms when the doors open.
Harry! Alma! Alma, stop! You wouldn't take me out in the street!
Jan pulls the yellow sheet over her head. Al grasps the elevator rail and waits for the attendant. The attendant sends the elevator shooting to Jan's floor. The doors open. Al is sprawled over the floor.
If I ever get on my feet again, look out.
Alma! That man just inspired me to do something I should have done long ago. You're too nice a looking woman to go out drinking every night, you know? What you need is a man to take care of. Then you wouldn't have so much time to drink.
Why, Harry, you're so strong.
The attendant grins. Brad carries Jan through the crowded New York street. The crowds gape.
They'll never believe this back in Wichita Falls.
Officer, arrest this man. He's taking me out to his apartment.
Can't say as I blame him, miss. How's it going, Brad?
Fine, Kelly.
Mommy, why is that man taking that lady?
Shh, I'll tell you when you're older.
A ginger Tom pulls the trailing phone line.
Got me up here to see the apartment.
Now, will you kindly put me down?
It's customary for the groom to carry the bride across the threshold.
What bride?
The Ginger Tom freaks out at the sight of an owl gargoyle.
How does it feel returning to the scene of the crime? Why did I spend a fortune having this apartment done over? Why did I cut myself off from every girl I know? Why does any man destroy himself? Because he thinks he's getting married. What does
what
it get
bride?
Me? This. Well, you did yourself a great job. And as far as I'm concerned, you can stay here and charge admission.
Brad walks into a tussle which pelts him in the face. Jan flicks one of the switches. The door locks and a pink jukebox tinkles out Brad's seduction tune. Jan raises her eyebrows, her face shining. Brad's face breaks into a broad grin. He hugs her tightly. 3 months later, Brad's convertible rolls to a halt outside Jonathan's office block.
Doctor, look! It's him!
Him? Just a moment, sir. Would you mind stepping into my office?
Oh, not now. I have to see a friend of mine.
Yes, but I want to talk to you for just a moment. Oh,
but I have some important news to tell.
It'll only take a few minutes.
You don't understand. I'm going to have a baby.
Of course you are.
Brad's dragged into the obstetrician's.
Jonathan!
The end is scrawled across a blue and a peach pillow. Another night again. A pink pillow shoots up, followed by a smaller blue pillow, an even smaller pink pillow, and a titchy blue pillow. They all have the words "not quite" on them. ITFC audio description.
I'd better be right. Oh, there must be a pillow